like a lot of medical device companies, we recognize that we touch a lot of very important things and have access to unique data that we can imagine how to use that to power everyone to better outcomes, right? And so, you know, we're at the front end of a lot of that, but it's a journey other specialties have taken. So, you know, I think particularly within women's health, there's just been less of that because there's fewer, we would call ourselves a pure play women's health company.
And now from San Francisco and the UCSF Rosenman Institute, the Health Technology Podcast with your host, Christine Winoto.
Today, I sit down with Holly Sheffield and we discuss how the medical device industry relates to investment banking through her unique career path. We also discuss women's health and the patient experience being front and center for the Cooper Company's global brand. Holly has over 20 years of experience in Wall Street. She left the investment banking world to join Cooper Companies as Executive Vice President and Chief Strategy Officer. But now she is the President of Cooper Surgical. Here is our conversation with Holly. Thank you, Holly, for joining me this afternoon. I know it's a bit late afternoon on your end because you're not here in California, but you're based in East Coast. Welcome. I'm looking forward to our conversation. One of the things that I would like to start with many of our guests is your story, how you get where you are. You have quite an interesting story. You started your career in investment banking and grew up in investment banking, and then where you are now. So tell us about your journey.
Yeah, well, and thank you so much for having me. It's exciting just to be part of this conversation with the folks that are listening, but with you in particular. You know, it's interesting because I have the world's probably most typical career and then atypical career. And the typical part was the first 20-some odd years, you know, following undergrad. I went to Wall Street. I did a training program, was a Wall Street analyst. I went to business school. I very dutifully came back for the summer and was a summer associate and, you know, came back to Wall Street, worked for the same exact team. In fact, I only changed employer other than through acquisition once in my entire Wall Street career, and actually to go work with a bunch of people who I had started my career with. So really from those very first trainee days through analyst all the way up to managing director, when I left and I was working at UBS, I was heading their global healthcare practice for medical devices and diagnostics. And then came the big change. And, you know, was incredibly fortunate that a client that I had grown a really wonderful working and personal relationship with, that I really believed in what their mission was. And I looked at the employees and my leadership partners and felt completely inspired by them and felt that I could really grow professionally. So when all those three things come together, it's pretty special. And moved into Cooper Companies to be EVP and Chief Strategy Officer. The Chief Strategy Officer, you know, that's becoming more and more a typical pathway for somebody from Wall Street, particularly women, which I think is fantastic, to move over to industry in general and healthcare in particular. The EVP part for me was really the exciting part because it was undefined and meant that I wore a lot of hats. One of those hats was having HR report to me. And, you know, I've always heard it say that people are your most important strategic asset. When you sit in the HR world, you truly understand what that means. And how I got to know Cooper through the lens of being the head of HR, I think was a truly special experience because I knew the organization all the way from the work experience of the individual on one of our lines up to our business managers across the globe. So that was fantastic.
That is a good way for them to give you a window of everybody in such a quick time.
Yes, and a window that's got a very different sort of curtain to it, right? So you see the good, you see the bad, you really feel where emotion is at and understand the opportunities and challenges in a different way.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because like from the investment banking world, I used to be in the investment banking world.
Yes.
The people are slightly in different, you know, way. So it's kind of interesting that you're being thrown in that world first right from your investment banking world. Tell us more about that.
Yeah. In that case, also really fortunate to have incredible folks who had spent their entire careers doing human resource. So I got to bring a strategic perspective to the discussion and marry up how we're developing our people with where we want to be as a company in the next 3 to 5 years. So I think it was a good combination of expertise where I really felt that I could add value, but also learn a lot. And as I said, see a very unique part of the company and see the company through a unique perspective. I also started up our corporate responsibility and communications efforts, which as a, multi-billion dollar global company, we had grown Cooper Companies up much like a lot of the medical device space, through acquisitions, through having some great, amazing market positions where our revenue growth sort of outgrew our infrastructure a bit. And so to be able to invest in those things, again, things that are close to my heart, was fantastic for the 2 years that I held that position. But just about 60, I'm looking at the date, 65 days ago, I had, the opportunity, and I really do genuinely say privilege, because when I talk about where my heart sits, the women's health side of our business, it's I tried to be balanced when I wore all Cooper hats, but now that I'm here as president of Cooper Surgical, I can sort of be transparent that women's health and advocacy and access and advancements and outcomes is just an absolute personal passion. And to have your professional life and your personal life sort of collide in this way is so great. Yeah. And moved into this role, which I've got big shoes to fill. My predecessor, an absolutely amazing clinician, every single letter after his name possible from a OBGYN perspective, and really gave the company an incredible advantage of just his network and understanding from a clinical perspective. And I get to grow on top of that now and bring the sort of strategic experience that I've had into an amazing leadership team that I have here. And, a position from a product perspective, which I think we're really blessed. We're everywhere the woman is. You know, we're in the GYN office, we're in the surgical suite, we're in the fertility clinic. So we've got a great sales channel, great sales force, and a global business, and a lot of opportunities in front of us.
Yeah, no, that's really exciting. And maybe for some of our listeners who might not that familiar about the kind of work that you do in investment banking world and how that is, translating and like what you learned from that experience have helped shape who you are and give you a better understanding about the strategic landscape.
Yeah. And maybe as I think through the best way, because everyone has a career progression and you build on the experience sets and the knowledge base that you have. And, you were in the investment banking world, and I'm sure a number of the folks on the podcast listening in were as well. That very first entry point is all about data and analytics and having numbers speak to you and tell you a story. And it becomes second nature. And that is just a core capability set. It was many, many years ago that I actually had my fingers on the keyboards, but it really, that foundation is pivotal to be able to come to every situation with an analytical hat on and very, data curious. And then you grow from there to, thinking about how do you package and sell a story? And, in most cases, your buyer is either a Wall Street portfolio manager, or it's perhaps another company because you're doing an M&A transaction. But that marketing side of where you then marry the numbers to the marketing story, is to me really a fundamental growth and skill set. I feel like I was a marketer for a period of my career. And then as I, moved to where I exited Wall Street, I was managing a team and some pretty high egos, you can imagine. And I had some pretty high egoed partners as well. And so that ability to drive forward revenues, help people see where the opportunities and challenges are, and really create a business within a business was that, last building block, I would say, that I brought together those three pieces coming into the industry side of healthcare.
And I think that's, looking back, I felt like when you look back at your career, that's when you feel like a lot of the things that you've done, it all makes sense to prepare you to do what you're doing now. When you're doing
decades worth, but
so I think that's exactly. Tell us more a little bit about your time, and because I also noticed in the investment banking world where the team tend to move together as a pack. And I found as much as people say investment banking is very cutthroat, but we are very, together, I guess, in that way. So you mentioned when you're at UBS, you're doing a lot of the M&A for the medtech space. Can you share us some of the deal that you worked on, some of the deal that was you thought is going to go well and then turn out haywire?
Oh my, usually I have my cheat sheet, which is all of the transaction lucides up on the wall. So, but I don't have any of those here in my new office. When I look back from an investment banking perspective, some of those transactions that really resonate are the ones that truly help transform companies, right? And, when I look back, and some of this is longer dated, maybe the memory of some of the folks on the call, but, working and leading the team on the Zimmer Centerpulse transaction. So now known as Zimmer Biomet, they went on to do even bigger transactions. But, you had a consolidating landscape within the orthopedic space. And, Centerpulse, a Swiss-based company, it kind of bounced around quite a bit, but clearly a desired asset. From the Zimmer management and board perspective. And it was quite, from my perspective, two things that I really took away from that. One, and this is a bit with more with the M&A hat on, a transaction needs to be shareholder friendly. So in that case, for those with memories, they may recall Smith & Nephew actually had an agreed transaction. And we came in with a more shareholder friendly or stakeholder friendly, which is much more the case of the world now. So we were sort of ahead of the time transaction and really going direct to the shareholders with that. And interestingly, something that probably sounds pretty normal now, but we went, we landed in Switzerland to present our offer and it was made public. And also then went to the head of the union. And also went to the head of the canton, so the regional leaders in Switzerland, and that probably feels pretty normal now, in terms of you've got a lot of stakeholders that you need to be cognizant of. But at that point in time, that was pretty progressive, mm-hmm. and it was a topping bid of an already publicly announced transaction. So that one really sticks in my head, and set that company on a pathway to become the market leader that it is now. The other side of that, which I really look and have enormous respect for the management team, as bankers, sometimes you sit on the outside and sometimes you get to really be on the inside. And truly being on the inside there and the preparation and the thoughtfulness and the plan around integration and really, thinking about how are we going to own this company day one? What are we going to do with this company in 3 years? And all the various elements that you need to have around that. Hats off to that team. An incredibly almost militaristic approach. And one that when I look at why transactions succeed and why they fail, that level of knowledge of the challenges that you're facing. And then also leaning into those opportunities, like being very, very purposeful about it, very Gantt chart driven, very ownership driven, really stuck with me to this day in terms of if you want to do something big and bold, not only think about the transaction being big and bold, but think about the integration and the ultimate ownership as being big and bold.
Yeah, I think that that makes, a lot of that experience, I think that sits really well with what you're doing. It's, you're in this position. It's not that long with as a president, like how many months now? 6 months?
Two.
I just increased it so fast.
Four, yeah.
So can you tell us more about what's your vision? Like what do you have in mind if you're allowed to share?
I stepped into, as I said, a great leadership team and Dr. Auerbach, who was the leader of this business, an enormous amount of respect for him. And he had stepped back with his leadership team and input from employees and really shaped the mission and vision of the organization. And, you know, I said before, like, I was very passionate about this business. I'm really passionate about that vision, which is a world of healthy mothers, babies, and families, or women, babies, and families. And so, you know, how we can fulfill that aspiration is very much as I see where we go as a company over the next 3 to 5 years. And as I set in place my leadership, we have come to get together through a lot of acquisitions. We have a 30-year history, but if you look at just, you know, the last 10 years of that history, we've done practically that many transactions. So continuing the journey that we're on to being one company, thinking enterprise-wide, really with that clinician, be it the REI, the embryologist, the gynecologist, the obstetrician, at the center of that thinking, but acknowledging that behind every physician is a patient. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's that customer centricity, knowing that our customer base is changing, anticipate where it's changing, looking at the very unique position we're in. We've got this great sales channel into all of those call points, as well as an amazing portfolio of products today and mm-hmm. things that we can develop. And we can do that through M&A or we can do that through thoughtful internal R&D. And, you know, going beyond just a product and thinking, as I said, about a solution that might be adding service, that might be putting a digital wrapper, that might be bringing data where data has not gone before. Mm-hmm. We've got a lot of really exciting things that we're working on, some which are, you know, already launched and out there. And we're getting to the point where we've got line of sight to being standard of care, which is fantastic. You know, we've gone from over that 30-year history, I would say, a mixed bag of important but not incredibly distinguished products to really now having market-leading solutions and the opportunity to find where the market is going.
So you mentioned about this is something that you guys want to continuously growing from the R&D and inside R&D and also through acquisitions. Is there like a target on how many you're trying to get?
As many as I can use my parent company's balance sheet to buy.
I always found like the shopping is always the fun part.
Yes. Well, but disciplined shopping, right? You know, and a couple points on that. We are fortunate, you know, call it pushing up on $700 million of revenue, but we sit within a multi-billion-dollar public company. And so to have the benefit of that strong balance sheet behind us and the financial flexibility that provides to transform our business is incredible. And it's a team that's proven they can do that. You know, one of our key power products, which is Paragard, which is the copper IUD, that was orphaned within Teva. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a little bit back to M&A lore, that asset bounced around between company and company as the specialty pharma and generic pharma industry just consolidated. And we were able to peel that out and say, this is our mission. We're going to put this product at the center of what we're doing and take share and grow the asset, which is great. But then also on the other side of that, it is the only non-hormonal contraceptive, long-acting contraceptive in the United States. And women should have a choice. You know, I mean, if you look at the population of women, you know, within our core, so, you know, call it 20 to 45, roughly, about 45 million women in the United States. And it's absolutely, we are not one size fits all. And, you know, to be able to bring forward with focus this product where really it had lost focus. So women know that they have this as the choice in their portfolio of contraception. You know, I think those two things fit really well side by side. And, you know, I'm hopeful we've taken share, and I'm really hopeful we can continue to take share in the contraceptive market with that product. So we've proven we can do transactions.
Yeah, no, I feel like there's definitely women's health product. I mean, we see a lot more innovation in that space as well, which is great. And we, after all, 50% of the population.
Yes.
The buying power of women.
It doesn't get the attention of interventional cardiology, or, you know, it's on the radar screen, but in terms of hot, sexy areas, there's not as much capital behind it. I'm really excited that we've got fantastic young women who are starting these companies, who are making it their passion to really develop these innovative products. And, you know, it's our opportunity, and we've done a couple of these, to be there with the seed capital for those organizations so that capital can meet innovation in a way that sort of works for the whole healthcare ecosystem.
Right. No, I think that's very much needed. You know, we also see more women-based investors who are passionate about women's health. And I think we do, you know, every bit helps, right?
Exactly.
And I feel like I think we all have to work together as a community to bring more solution for women's health. And it's kind of interesting because sometimes when you're in the room with all the men and then they bring this women's health thing, and then everybody like, oh, I did not know that was a problem. And it's like, well, you know, I think women are really good in keeping their suffering to themselves. And I think it helps to share to wider world to know what it is.
And as, you know, as we, as the industry, help people find their voice to know that the solutions are out there. But, you know, also, and I have, you know, I look at Gen Z and the younger millennials and their openness. And I really, it gets me very energized. Because there are a lot, you know, abnormal uterine bleeding, for example. Mm-hmm. If you look at, and I'm 50, I didn't even know what that meant until I started working for Cooper. And, you know, for women to share their health journeys, to, you know, be open about the procedures they've had or the challenges and the struggles that they've had, I think it just lets people have a more open conversation with their physician to recognize that something is a problem, that it's not, you know, a suffer in silence that they need to be going through. It's not unique. That's not, you know, special to them.
Right.
And to really to reach out for those solutions. And the more that that happens, you know, you look at incidence of prevalence and then you say how many people actually seek care. And it's there's a gap in women's health that we need to help close. And I salute particularly a lot of the younger celebrities who have been really open with, you know, some of their women's health challenges, and some of the older celebrities with their fertility challenges.
I think it's all about stigma, destigmatized it. And if they make it okay, it just becomes like I'm having, you know, it's a normal thing.
Yes. And people also recognizing that having three children at age 45 is not normal. So a lot of money went behind that and agony and pain for it to happen.
And I think sometimes people need to share that so that people know that it is not something that you just...
That you wait and it just happens magically because you decided now is the time.
Right, exactly.
This podcast is sponsored by Brown Rudnick's Global Life Sciences Group, a team of legal professionals that help life science companies, lenders, and investors around the world turn good science into good business. Learn more at brownrudnick.com. This podcast is also sponsored by Canon Quality Group. Canon Quality Group has been helping medtech startups set up quality management systems for over 10 years. If you're unsure when to get started with quality management in your startup, turn to the experts at canonqualitygroup.com.
So as a Cooper, I mean, you mentioned about that, to do an awareness. Do you guys do a lot of that public relationship to educate more? the public about the different diseases, things like that?
We've done some. We really have an internal commitment to do a lot more. And, you know, I talked about the strength of the balance sheet being an advantage that we have. I mean, I also have the strength of the platform of Cooper Companies. And really, and our sister company, Cooper Vision, which is the number two contact lens company in the world. And we make billions of contact lenses. So, you know, we've got millions and millions of users. So, you know, having those platforms to be able to either learn from in terms of patient education, awareness, or use their voice is something that, you know, as we move forward, you know, as a leadership team at Across Cooper, we're focused on that, both women's health. And then on the vision side, we recently launched the only FDA approved product for myopia management called MySight. And so, you know, that's another, you know, category people don't have as much awareness. We're really working on awareness and then, you know, launching that product here in the U.S. Mm-hmm.
So like, so many of, as you know, the Rosemond Institute work with a lot of entrepreneurs, and many of them have that desire to be acquired because usually it takes a lot more capitals to market and, you know, to reach a wider patient population. What are the things that you can tell them to get ready for? What are the things that you are interested in? And what are the, your, maybe a little bit about your process, that like, what's your vision?
So maybe I'll start with the basics, and then I'll give a little bit of insight for hopefully there's some folks out there that are working on things in women's health and give them some direction, inspiration is where we're at. You know, from an overall perspective, you talked about that cost, and it's increasingly, you know, definitely on the pharma side, but, you know, even on the medical device side, it's really expensive. It takes a lot of capital. And so being aware of how much capital is it going to get me to that inflection point that I can either think about selling or, you know, raising more money, but going into it, we're pretty eyes wide open on that front, particularly as you get to commercialization. If you have to commercialize, investment banking rule of thumb is $30 million for a sales force. And maybe you can do it cheaper, but, you know, just as I think through my experience, that's a lot of capital. And those prospective shareholders want a return on that capital. So then you think about how much your company needs to be worth. And you got to step back and say, okay, so either I have a blockbuster or the math just doesn't work. So that's, you know, kind of drill that down. It's almost back to that first building block I talked about in investment banking. Do the analytics. Really know what your long-term addressable market is, how much money it's going to take to get all the way through commercialization, those inflection points, and does the math hunt. Does the math work? And if the math doesn't work for that full journey, know at those exit points what you've got to have lined up to be an attractive target. So absolutely great IP. You know, it's a great idea, but if you can't protect it, it's everybody's great idea. You know, data. And increasingly, we're in a world where it's not only clinical data, it's health economics, and it's expensive to get both of those forms of data. So, you know, trying to capitalize when you're thinking about designing trials and whatnot, on extracting that data in the most efficient way possible. There's a baseline you've got to hit. If you can add a little bit more on, it's just going to make you more attractive. Mm-hmm. And then I do think, do things the right way. It's really hard for acquirers to go back and fix things that were done that can destroy value down the road. And I know that sounds a little amorphous, but when you're at that crossroads, you'll know what the right way is and what the shortcut is. you know, so that's sort of my, I would say my one size fits all advice to folks. And then the last piece around that is surround yourself by great people. And being female entrepreneurs, you will have great people wanting to help you. Embrace it. It's amazing, right? For us at Cooper, infertility we are, I think, you know, if I look at our market position, we view ourselves in the market we play in as the number one player around the world. We look for global solutions. Most of our products sit in the laboratory, so work with the embryologist. There's a lot of crossover into from other areas into embryology. So, you know, folks may not think of Cooper this way, but if you're in anything vet sciences, it's most of what we did started in animals. So there's a good crossover into what's happening in human health. And then as we grow beyond the embryologist, you know, in the what's happening in the front of the clinic, genomics, we're a big leader in genomics. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and then the services that surround it. You know, we want to be where the woman is. We're increasingly looking at what's happening from the home perspective. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of interesting things in femtech around that. So the full fertility journey for a family, we look across the entire spectrum and would be interested in any of those. In the office care setting, I really view our sort of mantra as being the leader of in-office care. Mm-hmm. And so how we can power the gynecologist to best serve that woman in the office is where we want to make M&A investments. And, you know, we've been through a cycle of companies which had a lot of fanfare. And this is now dating back probably 10 years, but I see another generation of those companies coming up. I think we've got a new generation of gynecologists who are looking at those technologies and saying, I'll do this in my office as opposed to an ASC in an office care setting or a hospital setting. So anything in the office that enables the GYN to do in-office care. And then from a surgical perspective, really where I look at our procedural solutions and where I think we've got a very differentiated position that I think is really important really is on safety. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people may know this. Obstetrics is the only profession where you own 18 years of liability.
Wow.
I have known obstetricians to throw parties on the 18th anniversary of their retiring from delivering babies. If you look within a, you know, cost of liability coverage and you know, every child, you want to make sure they have the very safest possible birth, but there is this incredible overhang relative to other specialties that is inherent in labor and delivery and obstetric procedures. So anything that furthers that safety, that, you know, clinical confidence, is something we're really, really interested in.
Yeah, no, that's no joke. That 18 years, I did not know that. That's
more than a Conway West song. So,
you mentioned a little bit about the digital, the data aspect, the data health, digital health start. Is that something that Cooper are? You mentioned interest also in.
Yeah. And I look from an organic perspective, I see that more as like a lot of medical device companies, we recognize that we touch a lot of very important things and have access to unique data that we can imagine how to use that to power everyone to better outcomes. Right. And so, you know, we're at the front end of a lot of that, but it's a journey other specialties have taken. So, you know, I think particularly within women's health, there's just been less of that because there's fewer. We would call ourselves a pure play women's health company. We sit within a bigger company, so maybe I'm being a little a little fancy with that word. So you know, that's very evident to us. What we haven't done is more of that, you know, direct to patient. And there's a lot of great things that are happening out there, and we're open minded to it. But it's not something that we're, you know, internally, as we look at where we're putting our data and digital dollars, that's not data we have right now. And it's not a digital expertise that we have in house.
Mm-hmm. So it's definitely a growing industry. And I feel like you have to better embrace it than ignore it, I think.
Yes.
At this point, definitely. And data is so powerful too.
Yeah. And we, you know, it's Cooper Vision, our sister company. You know, one of the things I'm really look at and I'm inspired by, and they've really led the way of putting the eye care professional at the center of their business. And that's been from the very founding, is focusing on the eye care professional. And an incredible amount of infrastructure dollars spent on the ability to direct ship. So that's very unique. And then marrying those dollars up with the digital portal. So enabling that eye care professional to own that contact lens prescription. So, you know, I love the advances that are being made in digital, I think in femtech in particular, but I get a little stressed about where's the voice of the clinician? And is it, you know, is it just a doctor who you call and say, hey, I want an oral birth control and boom, 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 here you go? Or is it really putting that clinician truly at the center of the care of that woman? And so, you know, as models evolve, it'll just be interesting to see what happens within this space.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think it's, I mean, especially when the obstetrician has 18 years, I think putting them in the center, that would help, maybe.
Or as they become more creative about what they want to do.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
They're incredibly talented, passionate people. And, you know, I do think we put them similarly to the eye care professional at the center of what we're doing. And so digital solutions that keep that clinician as part of the equation, there's not going to be all of them, but it's certainly something that I really celebrate what Cooper Vision's been able to do.
No, that's great. I'm looking forward to see what's the next few years going to look like with a lot of the exciting things happening. Before I let you go, you've done so well with your career. I think it's very important for me to ask, like, give us maybe top three advice for a young woman who just started their career and help you where you are.
All right. So very beginning of the career. I go back and forth on Sheryl Sandberg and Lean In. Beginning of your career, read it, live it. If you're at the middle of your career, it might be a little, you probably have already learned it. I think there are some great nuggets in there. I was fortunate that I was able to do that early in my career before way before the book came out. But you know, having a voice at the table, leaning into the conversation, knowing that you're an important part of the contribution, not hanging back, and taking credit for your good ideas, right? I mean, I think there's another one called Toot Your Own Horn, which is fantastic. But I think those are you know, really important area in your career. Second point, and this is interestingly the same advice I give to bankers, take on the big, nasty, hard, you know, if it's in banking, the super analytical, difficult client, et cetera, you learn more through adversity than you do by sailing through things. Remind yourself that you're doing this for a purpose because it's going to really suck at some point in time. But it pays dividends, you know, those really difficult assignments, hard projects, real challenges, you know, you accelerate your timeline significantly from a learning perspective. And then the third part I would say is people want to help you, embrace that help. And it doesn't have to be one mentor. It can be peer-to-peer relationships. It can be senior sponsors. It's almost like when somebody offers that, you kind of figure out what category they're going to fit into and you make sure that you utilize it. And work on those relationships and keep them fresh. I look at my career now and even some of the people where I'm like, hey, I want to bounce something off from you. They're people who I knew when I was in my early 20s. So as you grow, other people grow too. And it's a pretty interesting, they love to see you on your journey. Mm-hmm. You get to see it back and those relationships sort of evolve into some interesting things. But, you know, I think when you're in your young 20s, you're so busy doing, it's hard to take time. And you're thinking about networking, but more of those, you know, and again, there's different categories, mentors or sponsors or peer-to-peer, that definitely take the time to do that.
Yeah, no, I was... tell people, my kids, like, make new friends, but keep your old friends.
Yes. I think that's a Girl Scout song.
Is there? Oh, I did not know. I didn't even go.
One is silver and the other is gold. But anyways.
So it's great. It's been great to have you, Holly. And I'm looking forward to your talk in the next few weeks.
Excellent. And thank you for all that you do. Bye.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Health Technology Podcast. We want to thank our executive producer, Herminio Neto, our content writer, Casper Mossman, and our podcast engineer, Andrew Rojek. If you enjoyed this podcast, be sure to subscribe and leave a review. The Health Technology Podcast is available on all major platforms.